everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meets and merry parts, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody and welcome. Tonight my guest is Mike Steen. Now he and I have a very good friend in common by the name of Scott Michaels. And I found out about Mike when I was recently watching a podcast of Scott's dearly departed YouTube channel. And the interview was so interesting, I immediately got hold of Scott and asked him if I could probably get in touch with Mike because I really wanted to have him on the show. And here it is tonight, and he's here. Scott's podcast was called Celebrity Funeral Director Reveals All. And I wish we had enough time for that all, but we'll be getting as much done as we can tonight. And that includes Mike's three book series on celebrity death certificates and a whole bunch of other things as a funeral service provider, which he's been that and a mortician for the last 58 years. And in 1989, Gentleman's Quarterly called Mike the mortician of the stars. He continues to serve families on a daily basis, and this is going to be good. So those of you in the chat room can ask Mike and or share questions and comments. And those who aren't listening in the Para-X chat room, but you're listening live somewhere else, why don't you come over and join us at paraxradionetwork.com. And while some of you are doing that, Mike, welcome.
Welcome back to you. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, this is going to be good. and I mean, I think I'm going to start at the beginning. Because, you know, when most little boys are 10 years old, they dream of becoming a fireman or a footballer or a doctor. But when you were 10 years old, you wanted to be in the funeral business. Now, how did that come about?
One of my uncles died on the 23rd of December, and the viewing was Christmas Day, not how every 10-year-old expects to spend Christmas. But the next day at the funeral, I took one look at our family director, and I went, I'm going to be like you someday, in stone. That was it. Never wanted to do anything else.
Well, you know, some kids just, even when they get to be 19 or 20, can't figure out what they want to do. So this is really good. So you got your embalmer's license on April 1st, 1971. Isn't that kind of an ominous date?
I thought, are you trying to tell me something?
Yeah, but it didn't backfire on you, did it?
Not a bit.
Okay, this is good. So you're from back east and or Middle East, not Middle East, the middle of the United States.
Midwest,
thank you. When did you make your move to Los Angeles?
I came out to go to Mortuary Science College in 1967, because I was getting Social Security surviving minor child benefits, and I knew it was going to run out. And so I wanted to get as much of my schooling in while I was still getting my $100 a month.
That makes sense. And then, so you were first an embalmer and then a funeral director, right? Is that how it
right.
happened? That, how did that transpire from one to the other?
Well, in 71, my great aunt died. and I made the arrangements. That was my first time, and I was off and running. I knew this was exactly what I was supposed to be doing and where I was supposed to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never literally got out of the arrangement office after that. I would still do embalmings upon occasion, but my forte was a funeral director.
So it's kind of the best of both worlds, I think, because you can
both. I appreciated the opportunity to be an embalmer. I wanted the people to look as they were remembered, not the feeble creature they were at the end.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, thanks to social media, they show people that were not done properly, and it's just it's terrible. I mean, I can just see the next of kin looking down at the casket and just wanting to faint or something, you know.
It makes a big difference, I think, if the embalmer is the one holding the visitation, because that's instant gratification when they appreciate how nice you made them look.
That's helpful. Of course, yeah. It's validation, I guess, for a better
word.
When
I was in mortuary school, there was one of the classmates, and he worked for a big volume operation, and they had central services. So all he would do was embalm all evening. And mm-hmm. he would come to school and brag that he knocked one out in 40 minutes.
Oh,
I think, is that what this family deserved? Is 40 minutes of your very valuable time and talent?
Yeah.
And
really?
Does it look like a 40-minute job? I would spend 2.5 or 3 hours making them look just right.
Mm-hmm.
I took great pride in my work.
And it showed. And you knew about it. And then so when we're doing funeral directing. You worked at Westwood Memorial Park, where so many celebrities have been resting in peace there. And it's a relatively tiny cemetery. I mean, it's unique in its size, but it's also the logistics of even finding the entrance. What happened to the kind of get boxed in and nobody can get into there without a map or something?
Well, you're right. And I would hate to say how many times I would answer a phone and they'd want to know where we were. And I would tell them and they'd tell me back, there's no cemetery there. I'm sorry. That's where I am.
But you said, I think maybe when you were talking to Scott, that it wasn't always like that. I mean, it came out to Wilshire Boulevard or something?
It went out to Wilshire Boulevard from the beginning in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sold the frontage off during the Depression, and everyone who was buried in that area got moved into the present location.
And so for years...
It's a little more than 3 acres.
That's very small. I mean, I thought Hollywood Forever was small, but I think, maybe they're close, perhaps.
Yeah. By comparison, mm-hmm. though, Hollywood Forever is huge.
Yeah, and then, you know, go to Forest Lawn and you get lost, or Hillside Memorial, yeah. So, yeah. Got a quick question. I'm going to start talking to them when they come up. Somebody wants to know if you ever watched the movie watched 6 Feet Under, a show on how accurate was it as far as perspective?
It was very accurate, and my only objection was that you don't come into the funeral home not knowing who's there, swearing at the top of your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
That just wouldn't happen, and I always want to say, oh, and your minister's wife is here.
Mm. Yeah, but otherwise it was pretty accurate, huh?
Very much so.
Okay. Let me see where I was thinking about. You know, between all the different cemeteries, some of them have the biggest celebrities that people can just say, oh my God, this is wonderful. And according to size, though, I think per capita, Westwood Memorial has more of the really, really important names in show business, right?
Oh, I think so, too.
Well, let's name a few.
Well, Dorothy Stratton, the Playboy playmate who was murdered by her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Truman Capote. And
lots of actors like
Natalie Wood.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Lawford, who was there, then mm-hmm. removed.
Mm-hmm.
And Marilyn Monroe, of course.
Of course, yeah. I think that was that was the epitome of, oh, my God, this is where Marilyn is.
And Ernie Schoedsack and Ruth Rose. She wrote the original King Kong, and he produced it.
Oh, okay.
And Harry Essex, who wrote Creature from the Black Lagoon.
And I'm going to have you talk about him in a minute. Yeah, I mean, there's just a ton of people there that everybody would know. But, you know, I find it interesting that all of those cemeteries are major tourist traps, as opposed to other cemeteries that are just solemn visitors coming and, you know, visiting their loved ones. And Hollywood Forever was where I kind of grew up around, and they weren't like going in with maps, and, you know, they were nice people, and they would know where Valentina was and all these other people. I don't know. Do you think it's right for cemeteries to be tourist traps because people come in and, you know, they're not kind of quiet and nice as you should be in a cemetery? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know that I would think of them as tourist traps, although that's an excellent term for them.
Yeah.
But these people have supported these stars for many, many years in some uh-huh. instances.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I want to say it's an obligation,
mm-hmm.
but there is some kind of a quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm.
And as one of my friends says, why do you like to go to cemeteries to visit celebrities? He said, if I go to the door and knock, maybe they're home, maybe they're not. Mm-hmm. If I go to the cemetery, I know they're home.
Yeah, I like that. And that's probably the closest that some people will ever come close to a celebrity. And
absolutely.
The other part of it is, too, some of the written on the tombstones, really funny things, like Merv Griffin, you know, I think he says, I won't be back after the next break or the next commercial break or something. And, you know, I mean, some of them have a good sense of humor.
And yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of entertaining in a way, and you know, it's nice to pay tribute to those people, too. Got another question from the chat room. Would or could the trend of keeping cemeteries looking nice and clean come back? Something when people used to picnic there. I don't, the ones that I've been to have been pretty clean. How about you?
Well, Westwood is not, because they allow people to have planters and things like that on the grave, which mm-hmm. no other cemetery in the area that I'm familiar with allows.
Right.
But for that much money, I think they feel that people should be allowed to do more of what they want to rather than what the cemetery wants to. What's quick and easy for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, Hollywood Forever has movie nights now, you know, and Dia de los Muertos parties and everything. I mean, thousands of people fly in there, and they're sitting on the graves, or well, not on the tombstones, but yeah. So it's I guess it's the way you think about cemeteries, and you know, to each his own. But yeah, I think both ways it works. And now we have another question. I think. Wait a minute. Yes. Our friend Cece, she's a cemetery photographer, and she says, as that, how do you How do you view us coming in and photographing the headstones?
I think that's fine. I have my whole family back 200 years on Find a Grave.
Mm.
So I like people to be able to see who they were. Some of them have obituaries and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I peruse that just to see who's there, or if I have a celebrity in mind, to see do they have a picture of the marker. So mm-hmm. I'm 100% in favor of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I found a grave. I found one of my great grandmother where she was buried, just looking over there, and nobody else knew. So, you know, it's kind of a neat thing, and she had a picture on her thing, so that was even better. Got another question, though. Of all the famous people buried at Westwood Memorial, which celebrity have you heard the most stories about seeing their ghosts, perhaps?
You want to do that one again for me? Please.
Of all the people that are buried at Westwood Memorial, one of the cemeteries, have you, I'll kind of change it, have you hear some ghost stories about some of the people that are buried there?
I have never seen, felt, smelled anything from any of the people. I lived in funeral homes for 6 years. I would be very receptive, and I've never had a glimmer.
Wow. That's kind of neat, and I come to think of it, I've never heard Scott talk about that either. You know, when I go hang out with him at Hollywood Forever, he's got ghosts all over the place, you know, and stories to go with them. But I don't think I've heard of anything about Westwood Memorial either. That's kind of interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that. But let's move on. And so what is the job of a funeral director?
Well, we collect the vital statistics to complete the death certificate and the burial or cremation permit. We supervise the casketing and cosmetics on a deceased. We conduct the visitation or see that it is conducted, and we do the funeral and the graveside service if there is one.
So you talk to families of the deceased and...
Yes.
Sometimes.
And we help them with their casket selection. And I've never been one that felt there was any need to browbeat a family to spend more than they were comfortable.
Yeah.
Always said to a family, I want you to be comfortable, not only today, but in 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 years. I don't want you thinking, my God, what did we do?
Yeah.
You know, the day of the death, you know, nothing is too good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true, but they're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it's what it means to you.
And, you know, with the cost of things going up so high now, I mean, you know, something 10 years ago, a crypt would be probably 10 times as much as it was then. It's difficult.
Oh, yes.
Difficult. I remember
High cost of funerals, mm-hmm. you can lay at the foot of the Federal Trade Commission.
And they just, you know, I remember when my stepdad died, he got cremated, and it was $500. And that included the niche at the cemetery. How can anybody, that can't even, that's like a nickel to 5 million compared now.
When I went to Westwood in 74, they were the funeral director for the Los Angeles Funeral Society, and mm-hmm. we were doing simple cremations for $199. And if you wanted to add scattering at sea, that was an additional, so it came to a total of $255,
oh
which
God.
Is the Social Security payment.
Yeah, now I think the Social Security payment is still that number, and, you know, I don't know if they can't make it any better. We were talking about some of the celebrities buried there, but we've got, I just think about some others, like John Belushi, Fred Astaire, Bob Crane. Were you at Westwood when Bob Crane came in, or was that before?
I was, indeed.
That story, go ahead.
Okay. I'm really drawing a blank about his. I don't know what that's all about. Maybe a senior moment for me.
Okay, well, he was murdered in Arizona, and he came over to, I guess, to get buried in Hollywood or Los Angeles or something. And he was, as far as we know, bludgeoned badly. He got really badly murdered. So, you know, things like that, you kind of wonder, you know, when something like that comes in to the mortuary and stuff, it's got to be really hard, especially with the families and things, you know. I mean, normal people, you die, but, you know, when horrible things happen, and, you know, the same thing, I mean, Natalie Wood, I know you were there, and were, talk about that a little bit, what you took part in.
I did. Bill Pierce was the main funeral director with that service, as he was many times, the son of the owner. And so I was an assistant, which I was always pleased to do. And he picked her up from the coroner's office. He did the embalming himself, dressed her, made her up. She looked just beautiful in her red fox jacket. And the graveside service was just about to start. And one of the helpful friends came in to me, and he wanted me to find a handsome, well-dressed, unobtrusive paramedic to sit next to her mother in case she needed something. Well, that's a little difficult to pull out of your pocket at the last minute. And my paramedic friends were all working. And we had met the family the year before when her father died. So we knew all of them. They knew all of us. Mm-hmm. I said, she's a stoic Russian woman. She's not going to let herself get out of control. And the last thing she would want is for you to know she needed something.
Yeah. That's cute. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, I'm just throwing names that are coming to mind. Fred Astaire is there also. Dean Martin is there also. And Farrah Fawcett is there. And recently, I guess, Ryan O'Neill joined her.
Yes.
Yeah, in the same crypt. I mean, are they in the
They're
ground?
In the ground.
Okay.
They have a private family garden is what they call it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kirk Douglas is there, too. Interesting. So many. But now we've got another question from the chat room. How has the paparazzi practices changed and influenced your job, especially with high-profile deaths?
Well, that's a good question. And when we had Mary Tyler Moore's son, Richard Meeker, she said to me, I don't want to wind up on the front page of the Inquirer at the service. It was going to be a graveside service on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I said, they won't be in the cemetery because I can lock it. But with the high-powered lenses, I said, some gentleman can be three blocks away and catch the fly on your shoulder. Mm. That I have no control over.
Mm-hmm. And now...
It hasn't been much of a problem from the services that I did.
Mm-hmm. And now they have those, you know, flying cameras that, you know, they, I guess you it would be bad to try and shoot it down, but, you know, when paparazzi want it, they get it somehow, one way or the other, right?
That's it. Exactly.
All right. I'm going to talk about Marilyn Monroe for a moment because I guess, you and Scott were talking about how when she got interred there, it kind of made Westwood a little bit more a place that more people wanted to go there and be buried.
Oh, not a little bit, a lot of it. She put them on the map.
Yeah.
Nobody other than the folks in the neighborhood had ever heard of it before.
Wow.
And suddenly it was the place to be.
Still is.
Yes.
I would guess that most people that come in there go straight to that. It's an outdoor. What do you call them? It's not a mausoleum.
Is it an outdoor mausoleum?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can we talk about Freddie Poncher?
We're going to, yes. But I was just going to say that Hugh Hefner is right next door to Marilyn. So we,
yes,
you know.
On the left. And he was cremated first.
And, oh, okay. And now, I mean, you've got a lot of stories to tell about Marilyn. But there was a man who, you know, we'd be remiss if we don't say this, who wanted to... Well, his name was Richard Poncher, and I'll let you tell the story because it's really good.
It had been a long time, I don't want to say lifelong, but a long time wish of his to be, when he was placed in the crypt, that he be face down. So, and it was his wife's wish for him. So we had the funeral. I ushered everyone out. We did turn him upside down, and then I had the family come back in to see that we had really done it. And then we walked over to the crypt. A lot of people thinking that's rude, disgusting, every pejorative you can think of. And I go, well, yeah, that's your opinion, but this was their day. And this is what he had wanted for a long time. She wanted it for him. So am I going to be a jerk and say no, because I think it's so strange?
Mm-hmm.
Not my job. I'm there to accommodate people the best I can.
So he just wanted to be technically on top of Marilyn Monroe looking down, yeah. See?
And I would not have told that story except Mrs. Poncher made that cocktail talk. So it was no secret.
I guess she was a very nice wife and, you know, said what he wanted to do, but...
And now she's beside him above Hugh Hefner.
Oh, well, then it's fair ball play. Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
But her passing was after I left.
Mm. Somebody in the chat room said, any idea why Marilyn chose Westwood?
She had family members that were there. And so that just seemed like a logical play. And it was as simple as that.
Hmm. Okay. There's one. We're going to go to commercial a break in a couple of minutes. But there was one tombstone that I just fell in love with. It immediately made me smile. And that was Don Knotts, who has this huge gravestone engraved with his best clownish moments from his TV and movie career on the gravestone. It's etched, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's not somebody just, like, didn't make him look real. I mean, it looked exactly like him. I guess they took a picture or something, but it's amazing, and it's actually artwork. Definitely one of a kind. Do you have any other at Westwood that kind of make you stop and smile?
Well, Bob Cranes is very much that way, too.
And he's buried, and I think buried with the actress that played his, I guess, girlfriend on Hogan's Heroes, the blonde,
yes,
with the pigtails. And
yes.
So they were together in real life also.
Mm-hmm.
And they're buried together now, yeah. So, yeah, I saw a picture of that, too. And, you know, people can always go and look on the web and, you know, go to the cemeteries, and they always have pictures of stones and whatever. And it's really interesting to see.
Well, some people get very creative and others not at all. Minnie Riperton's, her endearment is, loving you is easy because you're beautiful, which was her probably best-known song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hang on a minute. Let me go back. There was a question, but then it was taken back because she found out on her own or we were talking about it. So one more thing before we talk for about a minute. Oh, yeah. There are some people that are buried there, some very famous people that are buried there, but they are they have unmarked graves. That's interesting. Who are they? Do you know? I'm offhand.
Roy Orbison is one.
Yeah.
And I never know whether, you know, they can't think of exactly the right thing to say, so nothing gets said.
Mm.
Or maybe they don't want the fans to locate the grave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what their rationale is.
Yeah.
Frankly, it's none of my business.
Well, that's true. It just doesn't kind of make sense because, well, privacy. You know, maybe after all those years of being in the limelight, maybe it's just nice and quiet and peaceful and you know. It was just kind of interesting when I saw that because it's, you're not used to that. Let's put it that way. Most want to be known and where they are.
If you're going to visit the cemetery frequently or if you come once a year on Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true too.
I think if you visit regularly, it would spur you into action.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. So everybody don't go away. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the cemetery. And we're also going to talk about Mike's books, which are a series of celebrity death certificates. And really, really interesting. So don't go away. And we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep. So look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening into Stirring the Cauldron. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up if you don't already know about the free weekly Witch's Oracle deck readings that I post on my website every Monday. Now, let me answer the age-old question before you ask it, which is, well, how do I know it's for me? And the answer is pretty simple. If you weren't meant to see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So if you're curious about what the week has in store for you, pop on over to marlabrooks.com every Monday and scroll down on the homepage, and there it will be.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And we're definitely back. And my guest is Mike Steen, and we're talking about being a funeral director to the stars. And also we're going to talk about celebrity death certificates. And we got a whole lot to cover still, too. Okay, no questions. I'm good. Wait a minute. No. Okay. When I was listening to Scott's podcast, you guys were talking about so many interesting things, and I just want to say that if people are interested, go over to his website or his Dearly Departed YouTube channel, and you guys talked for a long time, and you had some really good stuff to talk about, so just want to fill that in. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the books, the Celebrity Death Certificates, because collecting death certificates is, maybe people will think, a bit unusual for a hobby, if you want to call it, or what. It's kind of like an autograph book in a sense. And you've got three books filled with celebrity death certificates. And how many are there? Because I've got the one book, and I stopped counting after 100. I mean, how many all together in those three?
In the three, there's about 450, I would guess.
Mm. And over a period of how long have you been collecting?
Oh, I started a long time ago. And when I started, they were $5 and $9 each. Now they're up to $24.
Hmm.
And if you order a copy, and you can get one on anybody, but it will have in a red, big red letters, informational only, not for identification.
Mm-hmm.
Where, as a funeral director, I can get the plain one. And then for the ones that I have, after the law came down, I had a stamp made that said that. So each of mine, after the law came, because I wasn't looking for trouble.
Yeah.
And also now they do a lot of redacting on your copies, which they didn't before.
Mm.
Like the home address,
mm-hmm.
even the physician's address, I believe it is.
Mm. They don't do that
anymore? And Social Security is certainly redacted.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen any new ones, but you know, when I was looking at the addresses on some of the books, I'm thinking, oh, they were in my neighborhood; they lived there, you know, and you know, it's kind of interesting to see that.
I forgot who it was, but they purposefully gave me a wrong address, and the health department got all excited about that.
Oh,
and they were trying to protect the wife's privacy.
Yeah.
And that did not fly with them at all.
Mm.
And I forgot how they found out about it, because I don't think I told them.
No. Wouldn't think you would. I mean, you wouldn't have thought to tell them, because you didn't
no.
know if it wasn't the right ones anyway.
And my concern, just from a business point of view, is if they give me a wrong address and I have to mail them their death certificates,
mm-hmm.
and they wind up at somebody else's mailbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cost of them now, it's not cheap to get them when you need them. So I just, I'm scrolling back, and I overlooked something, and we were going to talk about Harry Essex. You had a story about Harry Essex, and tell everybody who he is and the story.
He was a lifelong writer, but the Creature from the Black Lagoon, he wrote early on in his career, and he was never able to top that. And he and my father-in-law were high school friends. And so I knew him from when I merged with the family. And he and his lovely wife, Lee, were at our house in Venice. And she had a medical emergency in the bathroom and collapsed and fell against the bathroom door, which opened in.
Mm.
So at least the hinges were on the outside so the paramedics could get to her. But I have every bathroom in my home since has had a door coming out.
That's a good idea. I wouldn't think about
that. And some places the hinges are on the inside. And then you would waste very valuable time with the paramedics trying to break in.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I kind of looked up about him, and he also, for TV sake, he created A Dream of Jeannie. So, I mean, he has lots of credits, but, you know, there's a lot of people there that you see the name and you don't know who they are exactly. But it's interesting to find out because, you know.
Well, that's why there's a 5 or 6 spot line bio in the back,
mm-hmm.
of everybody that, you know, thinks that they would be best known for. I don't try to do everything.
Yeah.
But enough so that you go, oh, that's who that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a nice, a big plus for somebody like that. And then I was, I think I told you this. So I was all watching, I was looking at all those death certificates yesterday afternoon, and it was getting more and more interesting as it got along, and then there were names that jumped out that I hadn't heard in a long time, like Wallace Beery or, you know, people like that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just kind of amazing. And we were talking, too, that it's reading a death certificate is kind of like reading somebody's diary, because there's so much information there that you might not have known.
Yes.
A lot of trivia, maybe. Like I told you earlier, Steve Allen, I just was, you know, strolling around, and it's all of a sudden it said Steve Valentine Allen. And that's his middle name, was Valentine. And, you know, I mean, it's nothing important or anything, but it just kind of caught me and, you know, made me smile a little bit, that poor guy on Valentine's Day, he was probably needled all over the place, right?
Could very well have been.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you have a favorite? I know, I hate it when people ask me if I have a favorite of anything, but what do you have the most cherished of death certificates?
I don't know that I have a particular favorite, really. Maybe I do. I was interested to see if Connecticut would let me publish them, because I wanted Hume Cronin and Nancy Marchland. Mm-hmm. And they were two of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And Connecticut said, there's nothing against it, so publish away. So I believe they're in book two.
Who was your first one that you got ever?
Probably Marilyn.
Really?
Yep.
So how long have you been? Oh, go ahead.
Probably because the best known and the number of people who are interested in her is the greatest. When I started, I never thought about doing a book.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one that came out, and it was really poorly done.
Oh.
And I went, I can do better than that. And I was off and running.
How many years ago did you start?
Let's see. Probably in the early 80s, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last book came out in 2009. So Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson were my last two big ones.
And are you thinking of adding them to another book or something? You know,
well,
just upgrading to...
At $24 a piece, you have to think, you know, how many of these am I going to sell, mm-hmm, to not only pay the expenses but make it a little profitable for me?
Mm-hmm.
And McFarlane and Company is the publisher for those three,
mm-hmm,
and they're priced at $29.95.
Yeah.
I think for a paperback book, $40 is a lot of money.
Sure.
And also, if you want all three of them, you're now at $120.
Mm-hmm.
If they had been $19.95 or maybe even $29.95, mm-hmm, I think my salesmanship would have been much greater.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't like the retail market. The thrust of their marketing is to libraries. And they said, well, we don't like the retail market because you send Barnes & Noble 100 copies and they want to return 25 because they're soiled and thumbed through. Where's the profit? I said, I want to say, from the 75 you sold at an outrageous price.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I was brought up to be more polite than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be good to have them all together in one book and adding new ones. Well, you have from 2009 to now?
What? Yeah, no, it stopped at 2009.
Oh, okay. So you didn't get any more then?
No, that's Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett are the last two big ones in book three.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's a good idea. It would be nice because, you know, some things like that just never get tired of people being interested, you know.
Sure.
And it's yeah, it's really good. You know, I know if people want to get them, I was looking around and Amazon only has one, the book, the third book. And then Barnes & Noble, I think, has them all, but people can get them if they want to at McFarland Books. So, you know, even one. I mean, it's going to take me a long time to go through book three, you know, because I'm not skimming. You know, this isn't something that you skim. You know, sometimes nonfiction books, you can turn pages and, you know, just miss things and wait till it jumps up in your face or something. But this one, even the people that I didn't recognize by name, I still looked at them because, you know, there's just things there that you get interesting things jumped out at you every so often. And, yeah. So it was really interesting. And like I said, spent my whole day yesterday in the afternoon just glued to it. And I'm going to get back to it soon, too. Because it's,
did you have any that you went, I didn't know they died?
No. You know, I'm one of those, well, you know, with Scott Michaels up on who died, whenever they do, you know it. You know, they're very few. So, and during the Oscars, you know, when they do that memorial thing, there will always be one or two that I didn't realize passed. But so far I knew. I was just more interested in the ones that were, like, from way back when.
Yes.
Like the Wallace Beeries and several others. I think there was one that was a silent movie actor, and I can't remember who it was right now. But, you know, and seeing the different way that the death certificates were done then, you know, now they're all typed up and, you know, you can read everything. And most of them from way back when, I mean, the joke about doctors not having good handwriting, it was really a joke because, I mean, I was staring at one yesterday and I couldn't even make it out. And that's, you know, that made.
Now they're all done on the computer and even the doctor's signature.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I remember I worked in a medical office for years, and every so often a patient would die and somebody from the mortuary would come marching in and the doctor would have to fill it out and sign it. But now everything, you know, it's not humane anymore. Everything's going by machine and computers, and, yeah, it's not quite the same, is it?
No, it's not. But, again, it's more losing more of the personal touch.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, fortunately, when people pass away and get embalmed these days, there is still no machine that can do that, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
I was going to say, don't tell me you know. You know? Yeah. So kind of, well, the process of embalming may be a little bit different from, you know, 30 years ago maybe, or 40 years ago till now. Maybe different, I don't know. Making things a little bit easier or something?
Well, when my father died 58 years ago, the funeral homes were all using what they called unit pricing. So the price on the casket was for the casket and whole package of mortuary services. Everything mm-hmm. that they did was included.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Federal Trade Commission says, oh, no, you can't do that. You have to itemize every single thing that you do. And these guys had never done that. And they all went, wow, we can do all this. It's more than what we were charging before. And we've got the casket sale on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can bundle and make a better deal. But you still have to show, for instance, on the back of the general price list, what each thing is. And it's made funeral homes a boom. And it's also brought cremation into the forefront.
Yeah.
When I started, if we got two cremations a year, we thought the business was going down the dumper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 50% of your business may be cremation.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll have a service and maybe nothing.
Yeah.
So it has cut into their bottom line much more severely than was anticipated.
There's so much greed in any profession now. It's just, it's the old touch and being able to sit down with somebody and talk. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of times when you go to other mortuaries or something, they rush you through and, as you said, try to make the most money out of the best casket and this and that, and it still happens.
One place I worked, we were having a sales meeting, mm-hmm. and the person in charge said, now, when the family has made their selection, then go over to one $200 higher and start talking about its features. Mm. And I thought, are you kidding me? This family has now made one of the hardest decisions they'll ever make, and mm-hmm. you want me to invalidate it so we might make it $200 more?
Yeah.
Not for me. I don't do that.
That's pretty disgusting.
Yes.
It really is, because it's taking advantage of people that really aren't in their right minds, in a sense. You know, there's the grief and everything takes away from their logic, I guess.
And as I said before, on that day, there's nothing that's better for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't operate that way. That's not how I was taught. I had a wonderful mentor with Art Chambers, and I was at his elbow for a year and a half because I wanted to know not only what do we do, but why do we do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I got such a foundation. I was never asked a question I didn't have an answer for. And I thank him every day for the wonderful career he allowed me to have.
Mm. You got a good one. You really did. Now, you know, you are retired, but you are still there for people that need your help, right?
Right. I still help my Rotary Club calls me a funeral consultant, and I thought that was good
mm-hmm.
because I help my former clients that either, you know, they call me and say that the death has occurred, now what do I do? And my also friends, I live in a country club, and so I help them. You know, some people don't know what to do, have never even thought about this, or maybe one of the spouses did but didn't want to bring it up to the other because they might not like it. So then this happens, and everybody's in a mess.
Mm.
So I try to sort it all out so that everybody gets taken care of the very best I can.
Well, that's nice because, you know, people don't know where to look for somebody that would do their justice, you know.
So I say I'm still working. I just don't get paid for it.
You get paid in brownie points and you know, good stuff, you know, because good stuff comes back to good, right?
I have helped thousands of families in 58 years. I've officiated probably 200-plus funerals. Because sometimes people feel awkward asking a minister that they haven't supported to suddenly now come and perform.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, rather than have nothing, would you like me to do it? And they all did, for the most part. And I learned how to do funerals from Bill Hobbs at the Westwood United Methodist Church right next to Woodlawn or Westwood. And he would talk, and then he'd say, think of them. What are they doing? Is it for grandma? Is she at the kitchen? Is she at the stove? Is she playing with the grandkids? Is she out in the garden? Is she at a group meeting? And then I'd talk some more, and then I'd say, think of them. What color are they? Are they the blue of the sky, the green of the grass, the orange of sunset? And I had talked enough to the family, so I had a picture of what mm-hmm. this person might be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all were very appreciative.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you're one of the good guys that really care. I mean,
I did from day one.
Mm-hmm. Well, from day one, from probably age 10, you know, you were working on it then.
And I haven't embalmed a body since 1985, but I still keep my license up and pay my renewal fee every year.
Well, that's good. You never know when you'll be needed. Yeah,
that's true enough. I'm sure I haven't lost my ability. It's kind of like swimming. I think once you know how to do it,
mm-hmm.
they may have changed some of the idiosyncrasies, but I could muddle my way through.
Yeah. What did it, You know, a lot of people, like, when they hear that you were an embalmer, you know, when you were going to embalmer school, did your friends and family kind of shake their heads or scratch their heads and think that was kind of odd?
I didn't ask their opinion because I didn't like to live my life then or now by committee.
Okay.
And my father, remember, when I came home in junior in high school with all the career pamphlets on being a funeral director, did a whole Roman candle. I don't care what you do, but no son of mine's going to do that.
Mm.
But by him dying my first year in college, the stumbling block was taken away.
Oh.
And while I may not have done it if he had lived, because in those days you didn't tell your dad to go pound sand,
right?
I felt no obligation to follow his directive when for me it was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and my mother knew I was right where I belonged. She even came out two Christmases and spent the time with me in the funeral home, which I would never have guessed she would do. But
yeah.
She fooled me.
Yeah, some people can't even walk into a cemetery without freaking out.
Yes.
You know, I always find it very comfortable. And people are like, I don't like it here. I don't, you know, we got to get out of here. No, well, no, can't be my friend. No, not that bad. But
well, it used to be that going to the cemetery was a Sunday afternoon activity.
Sure.
That's just what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother lived three blocks from the cemetery where my dad and her folks were. And I think she drove in Memorial Day because mm-hmm. she didn't hold any significance to the cemetery. That's mm-hmm. not where they were.
Yeah. It's it's funny how people end up doing certain things that other people would like, oh my God, you know. But that just makes everybody unique for sure.
Well, there's lots of jobs I wouldn't want to do.
Yeah, and they're
so
probably
I'm glad they don't all want to be funeral directors.
Yeah, see? It's working. We're gonna have to go soon, but you know what? At some point, because like I said, we didn't get to a lot of the things that I wanted to talk about, but maybe you want to come back and talk about some of the celebrity funerals that you were working on.
Sure. Absolutely. I'd like that.
That would be interesting. All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. And
thank you for having me.
Anytime. And I'm going to thank Scott for introducing us because now, you know, I know Scott, you and Scott have known each other for like 30 years or something, and Scott and I have too, and, you know, we never crossed, but now I'm glad we're here.
Yes, me too.
All right, well, keep in touch. And,
thank you to the viewers for listening.
Yes, they're going to be happy and smiling, and, you know, it'll be good. All right, so thank you all for listening in, as I always say, and until next time, everybody, blessed be. And Mary, meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.